Good morning. So the title of today's sermon is Evil Reversed, and you've probably figured out what that is, so I'll try and elucidate on it this morning. So first, I want to make clear that on this morning, or any other Sabbath morning, I do not wish you to park your sense, your reason, or your intelligence at the door of this sanctuary. I don't ask, indeed, I demand that you not suspend disbelief or deny doubt or suppress your powers of logic or of reasoning. Do not forget in this time about physics or biology or chemistry. Do not avoid any learning or insight you carry with you. Bring it all that to bear as you listen this morning. So it's Transfiguration Sunday, the last Sunday of the Epiphany season. And with Ash Wednesday this week, next Sunday begins the beginning of Lent. In the next 40 days, we will turn to reflection and to confessing the ways and the times we hurt one another, ourselves, and the gift of creation. But for today, let us end this season of Epiphany in recognition of and in gratitude for these stories of transfiguration. Let us take this time to recenter ourselves, as the Google Maps tell us, recenter ourselves on our shared journey as Christians, as we prepare to enter this time of Lent. So there are many reasons that this book, that we call the Bible, has lasted all these centuries. But I would venture, indeed for me, I would declare that the main reason is thankfulness. Gratitude for the places that it takes me. In the reading, in the thinking, in the searching, and the contemplation of these words, of these narratives, of these stories of ancestors, there are good, great starting places, starting points, jumping off places to, in the words of Dr. Seuss, oh, the thinks you can think when you sit with these words in contemplation. Now, I had originally wanted to speak to you this morning of four words: power, glory, sacrifice, and dormouse. I wrote as much in the blurb that went out in our newsletter this week. But as I wrote this sermon, it became clear for reasons of length and breadth that this was two sermons. So today I will speak of the first two, and next Sunday we will hear of sacrifice and dormice. To power and glory, two words of five letters each. We are not often comfortable speaking of power or of glory. We do not hear of these words much in our tradition, except in the last line of the Lord's Prayer and in some of the older hymns. Power in our time would seem to be connected with much that is negative: allegations of undue influence, of inequality of bargaining power, of self-advancement, of wielding power as an instrument akin to waging war to achieve selfish ends. We seem too to be uncomfortable with the word glory. It's an old-fashioned word, one that conjures up former times, times of group confessions and saying things like, glory be. Glory would also seem harsh to our ears, used to hearing of the vulnerable God, the intimate God, the one who walks with us, not filled so much with glory. We're not comfortable with the glory that silences our religious chatter and leaves us blinking and maybe confused in its light. But we hear much of both of these words in our passages from this book this morning. Moses encounters God on Mount Sinai, and the glory of God surrounded him, and he was there for 40 days and 40 nights. Jesus went up on the mountain with three of his disciples, and he was transfigured, we heard, transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. He was transformed before them. How? By witnessing glory? Changed by being in the presence of power? How can these two words, power and glory, how can these stories written so long ago bring any good news to us this morning? Well, what is power? Is it control? Is it authority? Is it strength? Is it status? Is it the ability to, with a stroke of a pen, just determine someone else's fate? Is it with words spoken or withheld that we decide whether someone is given or denied a position? Is it economic? Is it political? Does power begin and end with us? Is it ours to give? And so too with glory. What is glory? Are we the arbiter of who receives accolades, of who is worthy of our honor? My older brother, in his high school years, and you can't tell him I told you this story, in his high school years, as he will readily, probably, maybe admit, he did very little to apply himself. He told me years later that the reason for this was that no one had ever given him a good reason why. Why should I do well? What was the purpose of any of this? To get a job, to go to university, to be able to support a family, to get A's, to please the parents? My parents agreed with that reason. These reasons were not sufficient to him. Why apply himself? And so he didn't. Why, in fact, do anything? Can you hear this echoed in so many people? Can you hear it echoed in yourself? These narratives we heard today would give us the answers. Why do anything? You who have ears, listen. Moses has spoken with God. Jesus has been transformed by God. Now remember, keep your intelligence here. Hold tight to your reason. Moses went up Mount Sinai, which is also called Mount Horeb. He encountered God, and we hear elsewhere in Exodus that his face, when he came down, shone with such intensity that his people could not look at him, and he had to wear a veil. Jesus went up the mountain, and when there three who were with him saw his face changed. When I was a child, my parents would take us on something called mystery tours. We would set out in the car, and Dad would intentionally, or at least he claimed so, get us lost. Sometimes we would end up at Mount Horeb. Nothing more than a road sign at the top of a very large hill. That was Mount Horeb. Both the ascent and the descent were steep, but it was the middle that we loved, the very top of the hill. Dad would accelerate, and at the top, we would be airborne. For a second, all four wheels would be off the ground, and we would be flying high, stomachs in our throat, and squeals of delight would ensue. Moses and his shining face evoke much of such a response, the experience of flight. This experience related of an encounter with God, the giddiness of light, the glory of God, the power of narrative to invite, no, to demand a response. Hearts in throats and shared glimpses of glory and of power. Now, I have been back to that place since, that Mount Horeb, and there is no more flight there. The municipality, perhaps because it had watched too many people fly, had sliced off the top of the hill. And I am struck with the parallels to our own time, to the damage we have done in centuries past and continue to do to these stories, these narratives. Words written down that speak of change and transfiguration, of transformation. The damage we have done in flattening them, in slicing off their height, losing their breadth and their depth. Think of the damage done by insisting on the historicity of veils and mountaintops and clouds and voices and figures appearing in tablets written by the pen of God. And conversely, think of the damage done by insisting on the utter falsehood of veils and mountaintops and clouds and voices and figures long dead appearing and tablets written by the hand of God. Bring your intelligence, bring your mind and its ability to analyze, to deduce, to contemplate. Bring your consciousness. Give your permission, give yourself permission to raise it. And then look at these passages. Re-inject them with the scribe's attempt to put into words that for which there are really no words. An outward expression of an inward and common shared reality. You are holy. You are glory-bearing, glory-reflecting, and glory-bound. You are power-bearing, power-reflecting, and power-bound. When Martin Luther King said, "I have been to the mountaintop," his face shone. He had not physically climbed Mount Horeb, but sure as shooting, he was in that car with my family. When I visited the mountaintop, when I, however, reluctantly received my own call, I did not know my face shone. A person standing near me in that time told me that it did, that an aura surrounded, not knowing what she meant, I knew it did then. But given time and doubt born of societal conditioning and the rejection of all things that somehow seem flaky, I at times lose that certainty. When the person stood in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square, if I could have seen his face, it was unveiled and full of the glory and the power of that which connects us all, full of the glory of God. Evil reversed is live. Scott and I traveled to Arizona in December a number of years ago and climbed, if that is the right word you say, climbed the Grand Canyon. It is 1 mile down and takes 5 hours to descend and 5 hours to ascend. Signs at the top recommend hiking boots and lots of water. If it is past 8 a.m., do not even attempt to go up and down in one day, it said. There was 2 feet of snow at the top, and it was dry and baking at the bottom. At first, we laughed and joked on the way down. But then the road became more difficult, boulders, and with it pains in the legs. Who would have thought climbing down would cause shin splints? We spoke less often, and we became aware of the incredible silence and amazing majesty of that place. We began to notice a difference, both in ourselves and in the people we met, both on their way down and on the way back up. Help was offered that rang true. Those on the way up, their faces shone, without baggage or luxury, simply a walking stick and a bottle of water, readily offered and eagerly shared. And the silence, the glorious silence. This is participation in the glory and the power of living, the faces and the towering valley walls seem to say. This is shared life. There were not furtive glances or avoidance. There was full frontal eye-to-eye contact, and even those who were exhausted and breathing heavily, barely taking another step, would look up to meet eye-to-eye, another traveler on the same road. On our way down, we were passed by two barefoot young men who were yodeling and running, literally running down the hill. Someone yelled out to them as they passed, "What are you doing?" And they yelled back, "Living." Their yodels and their whoops drifted up to us for a time, and then they too were swallowed by the silence. Strip us of our possessions, our titles, our gowns, our perceived positions of power, traveling on the same road as all others. We will see and we will acknowledge the shining face of the other. A Canadian woman who survived the tsunami in Japan stands disoriented outside their ruined hotel, and a boy gives them a bottle of water. A man offers to show them the way to the Canadian embassy, and this woman continues to be struggling with her response to them. I kept asking myself, why are we following this man? We don't know him. I was wary. I didn't freely receive his generosity for what it was. And what was it? It is the same gift given to each of us this morning in these stories of Moses and Jesus, in these stories of change and transformation, in these stories of our God-given ability and God-demanding recognition that we access, that we share in that power and that glory. With each passing day, it seems, we hear stories of power abused, of glory debased, of lives wrecked. It is not cool to be Christian these days. It is not cool to proclaim from the mountaintops or the rooftops the love of God or the power of the glory of God. It is not cool to let our faces shine. Somehow it is seen as anti-progress or as against multiculturalism or some other such rot. And it is rot. Rot because without such proclamation, we are doomed to let the reverse of live creep in. There was a time in my life when I scoffed at the wisdom of the ancients, of anything written down before my time period, that I had not experienced, that had not been proved to me empirically. I was wrong, so wrong. And we continue to be wrong in hiding under a bushel what, keeping our intelligence, indeed applying our intelligence, what we know to be true. You are worthy. You are holy. The truth we speak to power is indeed true power spoken to false power, power perverted and born of fear, of evil, the reverse of live. Now we are all or have been subjected to the call of such power, false power that negates the holiness within each of us, power born of fear. The wish for power that leads not from our strengths, but leads to our weaknesses. That breeds on our fears and our insecurities. Let that go. If there is anything you take from this morning, let that be it. And we have certainly all seen in the last while what the claim of somehow possessing a glory that others cannot participate in can do to those in power, can give them a sense of invulnerability, the certainty of being untouchable, puffery and ego, isolation and loneliness. And we have perhaps been confused by the repeated statements in some theological circles that as all power and glory and holiness belongs to God, then somehow we are nothing, as if puppets with stuffing for brains, with God up there somewhere pulling our strings. And then there are the chosen few, the Moseses and the Jesuses, who make the trek up the mountainside and speak with God. The rest of us are relegated, as the disciples were, to sleep. Hogwash to both. Participate, experience, pray, meditate, search out written wisdom in others. Search out those whose faces you see shining, and listen to your own wisdom garnered on your journey. It is God, as Karl Barth said, it is God who makes us radiant. We ourselves cannot put on bright faces, but neither can we prevent them from shining. Take off your veil, please. Let your face shine. Reverse evil first in yourself, and then do God's good, glorious, powerful, holy work. It is yours, intelligence intact, to do. Amen.